Welcome you to the Cotton Specialist Corner podcast. I'm Steve Brown, Extension Cotton Agronomist at Auburn University. And with me today, I have my Western partners, Randy Norton from Arizona and Ben McKnight from Texas A&M. And so we're going to talk about variety selection and really hopefully get a Western perspective because the West is very different compared to other areas of the belt. We're recording on this date on March 1st, and I'm sure Texas has already commenced. So what I want to ask you is first, how does your institution approach variety evaluation and testing? And how do you communicate? How do you share that information with growers and with others? So we'll let you start, Ben, and maybe even comment on how far along you are in the planting process and in this whole variety discussion and variety selection process.
With the Texas A&M University System and Texas A&M AgriLife Extension, which I'm a part of, we're very heavily invested in variety testing, not just in cotton, but in all of the other major row crops grown in the state. Cotton has a fairly large footprint across the state of Texas. When you consider the size of the state and the different growing environments from north to south and east to west, you get quite a bit of diversity. Myself and several of my colleagues across the state, again, are very active in variety testing, not only small plot testing, but also large plot on-farm variety trials. We call these the RACE trials, and RACE is a handy acronym to memorize what it stands for. It's Replicated Agronomic Cotton Evaluation. And so these trials, again, are on farm. And so I'll just take my program, which is housed in College Station, and use that as an example. So annually, I oversee and coordinate approximately 14 to 16 of these RACE trials. And the geography that I cover, being housed in College Station, is the Upper Gulf Coast, which is that growing region that's west of the city of Houston, and then also around the College Station area, and then further north of College Station into the Blackland Prairie. We also have a couple of production regions that are set quite a bit further away from some of the heavier production regions. For instance, in Northeast Texas, we've seen a resurgence in acres in a pocket in that part of the state as well over the past few years. And then also down in the Winter Garden, which is southwest of San Antonio. So all of those geographies are the ones that I cover from the RACE trial perspective. Several of my extension agronomist colleagues across the state coordinate these trials in their regions. We conduct these all the way down in the lower Rio Grande Valley on the U.S.-Mexico border, all the way up to the Amarillo area. So very widespread. And then every year we compile these results. Again, these are replicated trials, even though they're large plot, which definitely enhances the ability to detect differences when you replicate a large plot trial. These results are published every year at varietytesting.tamu.edu. Just click on the cotton tab. The results from my trials and also Dr. Josh McGinney's trials are compiled together in the Southeast and Central report. And then my colleagues across the state, they have their own individual report for, say, you know, the Lubbock region out towards San Angelo that has its own report, and then also in the Northern Panhandle as well.
Would a grower in extreme South Texas, is he going to look at all the data, or are you going to steer him towards your data and the data south? How is that going to work? How are you going to steer the producer to look at particular information?
That's a good question, Steve. One of the things that I try to encourage growers to do is to hone in on the RACE trials or the variety trials that were conducted closest to their respective geography. Another thing I encourage growers to do is go back in time. I know the commercial lifespan of a cotton variety is rather short these days, but there's a good chance that that variety may have been tested in the previous year or the year before. Go back across years and look and see how those varieties performed over years, but then also broaden out and look at some other geographies and if that variety was tested. If you're a grower in the lower Rio Grande Valley, I would encourage that grower to look and see how that variety performed in, say, the Coastal Bend or the Upper Gulf Coast. And if it performed well from a yield and fiber quality standpoint, that's going to key you in that maybe that variety has pretty good yield and fiber quality stability across different environments. And that might be a variety worth looking into.
Before we switch to Randy in Arizona, I heard somebody from Texas in a meeting, actually south of the Panhandle of Florida recently, and he was a representative from a company, and he was saying, hey, in his part of the world, it still hadn't rained. So how dry is Texas overall, and what's the prospects for the 2023 crop?
Well, we've been getting a little bit of relief. Of course, it's been not widespread across the state. If you look at the Texas Drought Monitor map, there's still some drought in some of our cotton production regions. Just after last year, when we had such a historic drought, it's going to take a tremendous amount of precipitation to restore that soil moisture across different areas of the state. I would say I'm a little more optimistic than I was last year. It seems that, at least for our dryland farmers, we've been catching a little bit of rainfall over the fall and winter, and I certainly hope that continues so that we have plenty of soil moisture when we get to planting time.
Last year, Texas was slated maybe to plant as many as 7 million acres. This year, what do you think that number will move towards?
Well, all indications are that that number is probably going to drop quite a bit. Wheat prices are good. I've been seeing a lot of wheat in areas in production regions where growers have the ability to produce wheat. I think that's probably going to take a few of our cotton acres in the different growing geographies, as well as corn. So yeah, overall, I'm anticipating a drop in acres for the state of Texas this year.
Randy, as we look at Arizona, you're a unique environment. And I know that your state also has significant seed production for the rest of the belt. So how do you talk about variety selection in your neck of the woods?
It is kind of a unique environment, and it does complicate some of our variety selection decisions, because oftentimes we might have a seed company come in and ask a grower to grow a variety that we might not have a whole lot of local data on, that they need seed production, they need bulk up. We do have a pretty vigorous variety testing program, very similar to what Ben described. I mean, we've got what we call our UCVT, upland cotton variety trials, which are replicated trials on grower fields across the state. And they're large plot, you know, typically about anywhere from a half acre to an acre per plot. And they're typically replicated 3 to 4 times. And we run about 8 of those across the state in the counties, the southern cotton producing counties in the state. But we also run what we call our advanced strains testing program. These are small plot trials that we do in 3 locations, 3 geographically distinct locations in elevation across Arizona. And those are all primarily their experimental varieties, right? And so these are non-commercially available. We do have some commercial controls in there that we use kind of as our standards, but it gives us an opportunity to look at some of these entries that might not necessarily ever be introduced, or for lack of a better word, pushed in Arizona as a commercial variety, but they could very well show up on a grower's farm saying, we need you to produce this variety for seed production. And so it does kind of complicate, and that might be the only data we have on that variety is in a small plot trial. And we all know that small plot trials, it's an important part of what we do, but oftentimes it's not really representative of what the grower might experience on a, you know, 30, 40, 100, 120 acre field. It gives them an idea, but, you know, our growers really like to look at these large plot trials that we conduct. You know, that's kind of the bread and butter for them when they're making decisions on what varieties they're going to plant. They look at those trials. But because of the fact that we do a lot of seed production, like you mentioned, it does kind of complicate our variety selection at times. You know, let me back up and say, having some of that data does give the grower a little bit more leverage to say, okay, I know what this variety did in this area. You know, if you want me to grow this for seed production, you know, there's going to have to be some potential here for maybe some reimbursement in cost and loss of production. So it does provide that source of data for growers to help make that decision.
Do you have a requirement that it must first be tested in your small plot strains trial before it goes to the larger version?
I don't know that it's a requirement, Steve, but I mean, it's typically what happens. So in our small plot advanced strains testing, we allow up to 10 entries from each of the seed companies. So those are typically 40, 50 varieties, 40, 50 entries in those trials. And so very seldom do we ever see a variety that would go into our strip tests that has not been in our advanced strains at some point or another. But, you know, similar to what Ben said, I think he made some really good points about stability, variety stability. Oftentimes our growers will take a look at a variety test that was done in their location, and they might say, well, what do I care what that variety did in Yuma? You know, and to a certain extent, they're right. But if you have a variety that's a consistent performer in a wide range of environments, you know, that definitely says something about stability, both from a yield perspective and a fiber quality perspective. So I always encourage growers to look, and even nationwide, you know, look at varieties, how they do in other parts of the country, but particularly across the state, and see how stable those varieties are across the environment.
In your large-scale trials, how many entries did you normally have?
So on those trials, we limit them to two entries. So the seed companies, and it's kind of a back and forth, give and take. The seed companies will come up with their recommendations for two varieties that they want to enter into those trials. But then oftentimes we'll have discussions with them. It's things that we've seen in those production areas and say, well, maybe we want to look at this one, or, you know, we've got a new one coming out with a new technology. Maybe we want to throw that one in. But largely the seed companies kind of decide what those entries are. So right now, currently, we have four participating companies in Arizona. We've had up to five. So usually we're anywhere from 8 to 10 varieties in those trials.
How about in Texas? On your race trials, how many entries do you normally include?
Very similar to what Randy described. We usually have around 10 per location. We handle it very similarly to the way that they do in Arizona. We let our seed company representatives and folks with each of the seed companies decide usually two varieties per location, and that balances out to usually about 10 per location. We let them decide which two varieties they'd like to enter. As Randy said, occasionally they will get in touch with us and we'll look over, for instance, if it's a new commercial variety and this is the first year they want to look at it, we may have some data from the past where we looked at it in a specifically a company trial or one of our monster trials, which are small plot variety trials where we look at some of the experimental and pre-commercial lines. But 10 per location is usually what we try to shoot for.
Philosophically, how do you view the small plot OBT type trial versus the large scale on farm? My personal view is sometimes our producers only think about the on farm trials, but I'm thinking agronomically, maybe the better measurement of potential is actually in the small plot trials. But how do y'all think about those in your environment? Ben, what do you think?
I think the small plot variety trials, what we really try to focus on in the small plot trials is the pre-commercial and experimental lines. Now, we may have some existing commercial varieties that are in there just as a reference to evaluate how some of these pre-commercials size up from a yield and fiber quality standpoint. The other thing about the small plot trials is with all the different traits and technologies available, they can get pretty tedious to manage, especially with some of the differences in herbicide tolerance. We, at least in the southern part of the state, we only conduct four of these, each in a different geography. And I think the majority of the data that we get from the small plot trials, and as Randy mentioned, some of these may not ever make it to a commercial standpoint. So, you know, the small plot trials, I think the data is very useful for us on the research and extension side of things. It gives us another year or two to look at some of these varieties that may make it to commercialization. But I think from an agronomic standpoint, from a production standpoint, the large plot on-farm replicated trials are probably going to be the source of the greatest and most applicable information for the growers.
Randy, I bet you agree with that, but what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree completely with what Ben said here, you know, and I'll harken back to what I said just a little bit ago, you know, and kind of the unique situation that we're in with seed production. It really does provide some information for growers, at least to have some data on a variety that they might be asked to grow that is really not adapted to our climate in Arizona or our growing conditions in Arizona, but it gives them at least some sort of a glimpse of what that variety might do. And Ben's comment about managing those trials, I mean, that's exactly right. And we do both Pima and Upland. So that's a little bit different here too. So we've got both Pima strip trials, on-farm trials, and also experimental trials. And it's always a struggle when you've got some non-herbicide resistant varieties or non-herbicide tolerant varieties within these. They're difficult to manage. But I think it's worth the effort. It's worth the effort on our part because it's important data to feed into the entire variety evaluation system.
On farms in Arizona, Randy, are farmers spraying the technologies or they're just growing the technologies and not using the full complement of herbicide options that go along with them?
Well, it kind of depends. It depends on the region. You know, we have some areas where we've got more issues with resistant weed species to where they're definitely using the technology. But then we also have areas where they might be growing the variety more for the germplasm, the variety performance than for the traits that are there. So, I mean, I guess I would say it's kind of a mixed bag, depending on where you are. But we're seeing more and more use of the herbicide, particularly the herbicide trait technology, because we're late to the game when it comes to herbicide-resistant weeds. You know, a lot of you guys in the South and other parts of the country were dealing with it a lot earlier than we were. But we've got it now, and it's embedded in our systems. I wouldn't call it a severe case. You know, kind of what we were talking about before we went on air, Steve, you know, in Arizona, the only thing that grows is what you put water on. So we don't end up with oftentimes a lot of source of weeds and, you know, in other areas other than what we're irrigating. But it's still an issue. And so our growers are using that technology more and more each year.
Now, you may have answered this, but are farmers mixing weed management technology on the farm as well? Is that, what do you think on that?
Yeah, good question. So I'm sure you've all heard of some of these errors that have happened on fields, you know. So, you know, most growers try to not mix technology. We don't see very many. And when we go to a grower and we say, because we will have mixed technologies in these trials, and we go to a grower and we say, hey, we want to enter these entries, they're usually pretty accommodating. We're really appreciative of the fact that they're working with us as collaborators and cooperators, because it is a hassle. Because most of them do not have mixed technologies on their farm. Most of them are using just one technology to avoid issues associated with misapplication.
Yeah, we've seen those disasters here. But in Texas, Ben, I suspect you got regions where they are significantly using the herbicide technology and other places where they're not. Is that true?
Yeah, that's the case in some of the different geographies in Texas. And I think that in a lot of instances where that's the case, I think it might be the yield and fiber quality characteristics of the variety that drive that decision making. Otherwise, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. And I think it depends on really the size of the operation. A lot of our growers that, you know, may have 1 or 2,000 acres of cotton on their farm are probably going to stick with one technology and not mix it. Some of our larger growers that may have acreage that spread, you know, fairly widespread in different areas, they will probably be a little bit more likely to have different technologies, but because the acreage is so big, they can manage those a little bit better and, you know, keep them away from each other and then, you know, manage large acres like that a little bit different than, say, 1,000 or 2,000 acres.
Your producers, as you talk to them about variety selection and that process, how do you deal with them or encourage them towards diversification, or do you? I was in a discussion with some folks recently. They said, they quoted somebody, and it happened to be me from the past. They said, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And then they reminded me that I once upon a time said, unless that's the golden egg. But I don't see a golden egg in the variety mix today. But how do you talk about diversification in your environment, Ben?
Well, I think diversification can certainly have some benefits in some cases. So a lot of the questions that arise about diversification, at least from conversations that I've had with growers, are not necessarily related to different traits or technologies, but it might be more geared to a variety that possibly has the same traits and technologies as a variety that they've been growing. And again, I like diversification, but going back to what you said, Steve, don't put all your eggs in one basket. If there's something that you want to try differently, I encourage growers to do that on smaller acreage first and get a feel for it before they put all their eggs in that basket. That's kind of my thoughts on diversification.
Would you routinely encourage a grower to plant, say, 3 to 5 varieties, or do you kind of have a narrower list? What are your thoughts on that?
It seems like more and more our growers are farming smaller areas of land that are further away. And a lot of times in certain geographies, you get a fairly decent difference between one field and another field. And so whether it be, you know, soil characteristics are different or something else that's different, there might be a certain variety that has more of a competitive advantage on that micro environment, that very particular field compared to another. And so I do encourage growers to look at diversification from that standpoint. And I think that that's something that a lot of them already do. You know, even within one field, growers are going to know the sweet spot in that field where their yield comes from. And then they know the areas of the field where, yeah, you know, that's a part of the field where my yield starts to drop off when I'm watching that monitor every year. And so if we can select varieties for a very specific field like that, you know, that can bring some benefits to growers.
Randy, how do you think about diversification in Arizona?
We talked about this a little bit earlier in the turnover of commercial cotton varieties. You know, you might have a cotton variety for 3-4 years, and then all of a sudden it's being phased out. And so I always encourage growers to constantly be looking at new things, you know, to devote a little bit of their acreage to trying new varieties, because you might find one that works very well, and it might work very well across your entire farm, but that variety is not going to be around forever. You know, the classic example in Arizona, and I'll just throw this one out, is we had a variety that was released. It's a Delta Pine variety. It was released in 2010, 1044. It was developed, it was bred right here in Arizona, came out of their breeding program, and it was, in my opinion, a bulletproof variety for Arizona. It handled the heat very well. It was a very good variety, and it was around for a long time. We had some growers towards the end of the lifespan of that variety that were really struggling trying to find something to replace it because they really hadn't been looking at anything else. You know, so I always encourage growers to look at, and as Ben said, these growers know their fields and their farms better than anybody. You know, they know where the good spots are. They know where they struggle with certain aspects of production and to be looking at different varieties and just to be testing stuff. So that's kind of my philosophy when it comes to diversification.
Y'all kind of headed off my next question. We're all the time seeing new varieties, new technologies, maybe nematode-resistant new varieties in that vein as well. Do you have a percentage or an amount you would encourage the farmer to devote to say, hey, let's look at some new stuff? What do you think about that, Randy?
Again, back to the analogy of the eggs in one basket. You know, they're there to remain sustainable, economically sustainable. They need to make money. So I don't ever encourage that they, you know, do anything on a wide scale, but maybe take a field or two fields, you know, maybe 30, 40 acres, you know, get a couple of bags of a variety and plant it and see what it does, how that's going to perform. I don't encourage large scale testing. That's what we do, right? That's our purpose with the university. We can take on that risk, but devoting a small percentage, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10%, if even that much, if I was to throw out a percentage, but something like that, I would encourage them to do some testing with.
Yeah, that sounds like a good number, 5 or 10%, or even split a field variety A, B versus a standard. So how about in Texas, Ben? What do you think about, how do you talk about new stuff and farmers getting a glimpse of new stuff?
Very similarly to what Randy said, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And I think that our growers, when they do try something new, it's a very small percentage, probably 5 to 10%, as Randy said. And I would encourage them to keep it small until they determine whether or not, you know, that's going to be a fit for their production style and their production system.
Do y'all produce, develop, offer, however you want to say it, a recommended variety list each year?
I mean, I do make general recommendations based on our trials of saying, you know, these varieties have performed well. I do these figures for a given location that plots out lint yield on the y-axis and premium associated with fiber quality on the x-axis. So you have kind of two, and you take the average of those, and you have these two bisecting lines that kind of create four quadrants on that graph. And anything that's in that upper right-hand quadrant is performing better than average with respect to both lint yield and fiber quality of that location. So that kind of forms the basis for mine, and I'll look at that across all locations, and I'll kind of come up with a recommendation on what I think in terms of performance varieties will do for growers across the state.
How about it, Ben? You have such a diverse growing environment across Texas. I can't imagine that you have a list, but go ahead and tackle that.
Well, that's kind of built into the race trial results. One of the things that we do in those results is we take it region by region. So, for example, in the Blackland Prairie growing region, we may have several trials that are irrigated and several trials that are dryland. And so just using the Blackland Prairie as an example, we'll take all of the irrigated trials that we have, whether it be four or five in that region. And then by location, we'll take a mean of each variety and however they rank across that region, whether it be irrigated or dry land, we rank them in a table within the race trial results. So again, that's kind of a built-in list, if you will, within our variety publication.
Any final thoughts on variety selection?
Steve, some thoughts I'll share with you kind of in closing here. You know, we produce these publications with our variety test results. And what I like to tell growers is I try to impress upon the importance of this decision. You know, it really is kind of one of the most important decisions they're going to make that's going to lay the foundation for the rest of the season. You know, we can see in some of these trials, we'll see up to a bale difference from the highest performing variety to the lowest performing variety. And within statistically significant groups, you know, you might have an LSD of 150, 200 pounds of lint yield. And so, you know, there can be a significant economic impact as a result of poor selection of a variety. And not just yield, but fiber quality. I mean, you might see as much as a 4 or 5 cent difference in fiber quality premiums associated with a particular variety. So I, you know, just try to impress upon growers the importance of looking at data, and not being afraid to look outside their local conditions and look at varieties across regions in the state and even outside the state to try to make the best decision they can make for a variety selection on their farm, because it's an important decision.
It's interesting, in your area, you're going to produce some of the highest yields. And in many areas, that's all they care about. But you also care about fiber quality. And certainly, given your typical fall weather, you're going to realize that full quality, whereas some of us, we're going to lose some of that season in. But that's interesting that you talk for both parameters of the examination of a variety. Anything else you'd like to add, Ben or Randy?
I would just like to echo what Randy said. Variety decision-making, in my opinion, is one of the most important, if not the most important decision a grower is going to make all year. And that's going to determine pretty much your entire season when it comes to management. One of the things that I like to share with growers about variety decision-making is we have so many different traits and technologies that are available as tools to use to combat, you know, certain weed issues or insects. So what I like to share with growers is, you know, determine one of the things on your farm that's going to potentially be a yield limiting factor. How can we use those traits and technologies to overcome that or stabilize our yield a little more? For instance, if I'm growing on a field where I consistently year in and year out, or, you know, occasionally have bacterial blight problems, the first thing I'm going to be looking at is a variety that has resistance to bacterial blight. And that could be said for a number of different things, whether they be weed issues or insect issues. If that's going to be one of your most yield limiting factors, you know, put that on the forefront of your decision making. And I use the bacterial blight example. You know, once you determine that as a yield limiting factor, look at those varieties that have resistance to bacterial blight. Within that list of varieties, see how they perform from a yield and fiber quality standpoint. So that's just, you know, some of the things that I like to share with growers about variety decision making.
Any other comments?
I just hope growers, you know, this is coming out right around planting season, as we were discussing earlier. I just wish all the growers across the country a great year. Hopefully we have a good year with moisture and weather cooperates with us. We're off to the races here pretty soon. Won't be long.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed for a lot more precipitation in the state of Texas this year. Not too much, but more than we had last year.
Yeah, we're not too picky, are we, Ben? We just want water when we want it, where we want it.
That's right.
So that concludes our podcast from the Western perspective on variety selection. I want to thank Randy Norton and Ben McKnight for joining me. Especially grateful to Cotton Incorporated for sponsoring this and making this possible and posting it across the U.S. Cotton Belt. We also look forward to, in the next day or so, to having a Mid-South discussion of variety selection. So stay tuned.